Hey, did you successfully disguise your disappointment when you opened that gift yesterday? Who exactly was he thinking about when he bought that for you? Did your relatives behave themselves? Did you find that you missed them during the rest of the year? Or is it the gathering on Christmas Day that you want to handle only? I'm hoping that reflections, reconciliations, and revivals surfaced yesterday, along with intimate moments complete with a renewed perspective about what matters most. And I'll bet you got some stories about the last few days or about holiday moments that are frozen in time and desperate to thaw. And tonight, once again, we want to listen to your stories, short ones, no more than 2 to 3 minutes long, because your recollections are the ones that make holidays worthwhile. And they don't have to be Christmas stories, because they're not the only game in town. And don't you dare think that you need to sound like a professional. Don't overthink your stories. Just be raw, real, and true. No polish required or even encouraged, because this is So What's Your Story on listener-sponsored KPFT 90.1 FM, the coolest place on your dial, the site where we spotlight every kind of storyteller, because all of you are storytellers and share at least one thing in common. Each of you is amazing with an ability to engage us with stirring personal stories. So give me a call at 713-526-5738, and you're going to be greeted by Scooter, who's kind enough to fill in for Roxy tonight. Thank you, buddy. And listen, first names only. We only got first names only, so if you want to make one up, go for it. But I'm your host, Hank Rubinchek, professor of communication at the University of Houston downtown, just waiting for your story. So please give us a call at 713-526-5738. Scooter, I had an accident last Saturday. Now, listen to this. It's, you know, nobody got hurt. No big deal. I'm coming down Dunlavy, and I'm just passing the intersection Dunlavy and Dallas when a guy comes out of that little Texaco mini mart. Boom, slams into me.
Ow.
Cross just broadsides me on the passenger side. Thank God nobody's sitting there. Nobody's hurt. He spins me around, and I'm thinking, oh, for God's sakes, what a great way to begin the holiday season. I pull into the little lot next door. He gets out of his car, and he says, I'm sorry. I said, really? You know, I'm thinking, this guy is nice. Are you kidding me? So he's nice. He demonstrates integrity. He demonstrates honesty. And you wouldn't believe what I did today. Today I actually wrote him a thank you note. A thank you note. I said, thank you for your honesty and your integrity. He said that he placed the claim right away. At first, I didn't believe him, but I called his insurance company, and sure enough, he placed the claim. And I got to tell you something, despite the fact that it was an accident, it demonstrated, to me at least, something about the holiday spirit. I found that, in fact, there are really good folks around. So let's go ahead and give us a call at 713-526-5738. We got a few people waiting to tell their stories right now. Let's see who's got. Carol?
Yes.
How are you?
I'm fine.
I know, I recognize this voice. I recognize this voice. This lovely lady is related to me. I'll tell you how in just a few minutes. But, Carol, you are on the air, and you've got your favorite Christmas story.
Yes, I do.
Please share that with us.
The best Christmas story I ever heard was told to me by my father, who was born in 1896, just before time slid into the 1900s. This nation was still an agrarian society, and over the hills and through the woods to grandmother's house we go was more than just a quaint song. It really was where people, many people, went for Christmas, home to the farm. That is where he went for Christmas, to his grandfather's farm in Wesley, Texas, along with his mother and father, aunts and uncles, and 7 cousins of various ages. And this is how he remembered his Christmas. The little cousins knew, because the older ones had told them, that a few months before Christmas, when the crops were in, grandfather would saddle up his horse and ride out over the stubble fields to the creek at the edge of his property. And there he would dismount and prowl the banks looking for the most perfect cedar tree for their Christmas. It must have the straightest trunks, the fullest branches, and must be tall enough to sweep the star against the parlor ceiling. When he found it, and he always did, he would mark it. At the beginning of Christmas week, he would hitch a horse to a sled, and off they would go trundling across the neat earthen rows laid up for the spring planting. He would harvest the tree and bring it back to the barn, where it stood in the deepest, darkest, coolest recesses in a bucket of wet sand wrapped in an old horse blanket. The little ones knew it was there in a secret place. The older ones told them, in secret, of course. They always wished they could find it. It became a great game for them. Screeching and screaming, they would run as fast as they could through the dim corridor between the stalls toward the light, casting their eyes from side to side to catch a glimpse of the tree. But they never saw it. And they never made it from the front door of the barn to the back without hearing their grandfather's voice from somewhere on the farm shouting, "You kids get out of that barn, you'll scare the horses." No one could say who had the most fun, the children or the grandfather. Finally, the great day arrived, Christmas Eve. The parlor was strictly off limits to the children, and this was the day to be very, very good. He remembered well that the kitchen was the busiest place, as last-minute preparations were made for the Christmas Day feast to follow. Suddenly, the house was filled with a sweet perfume of cinnamon and mace and ginger, with the odor of thyme and sage, and that indescribable essence of newly baked bread, and also a mysterious scent of freshly cut cedar. For the adults, it was a day of whispered conversation and laughter and rustling paper. There was great anxiety among the children. To them, it was the longest day of the year. But at last the sun had set and the supper dishes were cleared away, and the adults disappeared into the parlor. The children waited in the hall, shivering in anticipation. After what seemed an eternity, the eldest child was bidden to slide open the parlor doors. It was then my father told me he never knew until he was grown and had children of his own why it was that all the adults were gathered at the end of the parlor around the candle-lit Christmas tree, so they could see the faces of the children when they came through the parlor doors. This was their Christmas joy. That's it, Hank.
Beautiful. Oh, thank you, Carol. That was beautiful. That was such a beautiful, beautiful story that unfolded magnificently when you told it. Thank you so much for sharing that. That really was your favorite Christmas, huh?
Yes, it was.
Yeah, and you love storytelling. I know that you love storytelling, and storytelling was always a part of your generation, and it was always an integral part of how you expressed yourself and all the heirlooms that you share and the memories that you have about your children and your grandchildren, and you're a very, very loved woman, and I just want to thank you so much for sharing that, and I hope you had a great Christmas. Carol is my mother-in-law, and nobody could ever, ever ask for a better one, I'll tell you.
Thank you, Hank. Thank you.
You have a beautiful evening. Thank you, Carol.
Thank you, dear. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. You are listening. This is Hank Rubinchek, and you're calling in on your holiday stories at 713-526-5738. You are listening to So What's Your Story, KPFT 90.1 Houston, 89.5 in Galveston, and 90.3 in Livingston. KPFT.org for those of you who want to get online. And let's see who we've got going on next. Phil.
Phil.
You are on the air. And thank you for calling, buddy. You are my friend.
Yes.
Incarnate.
Indeed.
Share with us your tale.
Okay, well, my tale was in the year 1960. I cannot believe that.
We want many of our listeners to know that was last century, and that's okay.
1960.
Yeah, just letting you know. Yeah.
Yeah. Boy, and it happened during the week of Christmas.
Yeah.
In the fall and winter, and it was the week of Christmas in 1960, just before the New Year of 61, and there I was, 20 years of age, studying acting in New York City, and I never imagined that, heck, I would ever be on a Broadway stage, but it wasn't too long at the beginning of my acting school and acting training that I ended up on a Broadway stage with arguably the greatest actor of the last century. Now, how could that be? An acting student just starting out on an acting career, which I've enjoyed realizing in Houston in so many ways, over so many years, and there I was in New York City, and I needed a little extra cash. My folks were helping me through acting school. However, I got a job at a concession stand at a Broadway theater, and the play Beckett was going on with Laurence Olivier and Anthony Quinn.
Wow. Two very big names.
What's that, Hank?
Two very big names.
Very big names. And I was watching them and making a little spending money, selling at the concession stand during intermission. However, the security was so lax back in those days. We weren't worried about the awful things of strangers and what they might do if they get to where they don't belong. I just wandered backstage after my job, and I would watch the play Beckett with Laurence Olivier from a corner of the stage, and people there probably thought I was just a stagehand. And nobody questioned me or anything. I just found a way to get backstage at intermission when it was over. The intermission was over.
Mm-hmm.
And I would hear Laurence Olivier ask about his favorite soccer team from time to time. And I'll never forget his words when they were winning. Laurence Olivier said, "That's marvelous. That's absolutely marvelous." That his football team was, and isn't that, here it is 50-something years later, and I remember him saying, "That's absolutely marvelous. Oh, what a fantastic football team I've chosen." So, and then I was backstage on closing night, and there's Sir Lawrence. I don't know if he was a sir at that time when mm-hmm. I was 20 years of age and what his age was, but he said, who are you? I've seen you. What company are you with?" And I said, "Well, I'm an acting student. I've been selling orange juice at intermission." And said, "Oh, really? An acting student? Well, come to the cast party." I said, "Well, thank you, sir, very much." So I went to the cast party on stage, and I was leaning against a stage column that was used in the scenery of Beckett. And next thing I feel is a tap on my shoulder saying, "I'm so sorry. Do you mind? My wife's a bit pregnant, as you can see. She'd love to be lean against this column. And may she sit here and put her back against this column. Do you mind?" And that was Laurence Olivier graciously asking me if I would give up my space for his pregnant wife, Joan Plowright.
Wow.
No problem. Mm-hmm. And then the final thing that I'll never forget, and what a wonderful Christmas, Hanukkah present, whatever you say at this time of the year it was for me as an acting student, to be on stage with Anthony Quinn, Laurence Olivier, Joan Plowright. And then I heard Laurence Olivier say to the folks in the American circles, there were English actors in the play, but of course he's English, but here's Laurence Olivier on the stage, and he says, "I want to thank you so much for being so kind to me all these weeks during Beckett, you know, especially since I'm a foreigner."
That's beautiful. I got to tell you something. I don't know if he was a sir, but you ought to be knighted. I'll tell you that. You ought to be knighted, Sir Phil. I'll tell you, that's a great story. I never heard that one. I've heard a lot of them, but I haven't heard that one. That's pretty remarkable.
And I when I saw that it was around Christmas time and thinking of stories I dug deep and it came right out because it's indelible.
It is wonderful. Phil, thank you so much for sharing that. I'm going to get back to you later. Thank you, my friend.
Thank you for having me.
You have a great evening. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. You know, I posted a link to inspirational stories on the So What's Your Story Facebook, which I invite all of you to visit each week, by the way. Real stories, just like the ones you own, told by real people. And here's a story that really I was especially drawn to. I want you to listen to this story. It's called Joy from Sorrow. "Happy holidays," the cheerful Walmart greeter hollered as I breezed through the automatic doors. And there was this elf hat perched merrily on his head. Now, the store was decked out for the season, red garlands and all sorts of other kinds of beautiful things coming down the aisle, and displays of twinkling lights and plastic Santas, and directly in front of the entrance, a big, tall fir tree, its branches hung with colorful ornaments. Christmas was approaching rapidly, and all the shoppers around me seemed to be in the spirit. I wished I could be too, but my gift list was one name shorter than it should have been. Dad was gone, and that was all I could think about. See, after his doctor diagnosed him with leukemia at the age of 69, he refused to get down. Up until he took his last breaths, he kept smiling, trying to keep us upbeat. He knew he was going to a better place, he said, though he couldn't imagine any place better than here with us. Preston is the happiest person I know, Dad's friends often said, and they were right. I couldn't remember a time when there wasn't a smile on his face. It came from his generous and giving spirit. He got joy out of helping others all the time, even if he sacrificed things himself. He had a deep faith in God and believed the best about people. Pushing my shopping cart past the greeter and looking down at my list, it was all I could do to keep my composure. I always loved buying gifts for Dad. He got so excited at the shirt or shoes that I picked out for him, and I never had more joy than to give him those gifts. I paused in front of his Christmas tree. White tags hung from the branches in between the ornaments, one of those angel trees, I thought. Shoppers could choose a tag and buy a gift for a child of an inmate, something like that. I started to walk on. The sign in front of me caught my eye. It said, "Be a Santa for a senior." Huh? I've never heard that program before, but I stopped, and before I knew what I was doing, I reached out and I grabbed a tag. Gift shirt, size XL, pants, waist 42. And shoes or socks, size 12 to 12 and a half. The senior's name? Preston. I whipped my cart around and headed to men's clothing. I had a gift to buy for a senior with the same name as my dad. And the same size, too. I thought that was a pretty cool story. And I wanted to share all of that with you. You know, stories come from all over the place, and sometimes they come from the most conversational moments. I have this very, very dear friend who doesn't consider himself to be a good storyteller, but I got to tell you, he's one of the best around, particularly because he unintentionally uses stories in conversation. The other day, he was telling me that he was on a cruise with his wife. He had some trepidation about going on cruises because he thought all there was to do was eat. He was pleasantly surprised. He told me that he wanted to really take advantage of every activity on board: karaoke, dance lessons, yoga, swim, get into a little casino. And one morning he saw in the boat's newsletter that the Friends of Bill will be convening in the upper deck. Well, thinking it was some kind of discussion group, he decided to visit because, after all, he did want to take advantage of every conceivable activity. So he walks into this room and people are seated in a circle. He grabs a folding chair and he's sitting there, and suddenly they start introducing themselves. The first person says, "Hi, my name is Sally, and I'm an alcoholic." And then, "Hi, I'm Fred. I'm an alcoholic." "Hi, I'm Betty. I'm an alcoholic." Well, my friend is totally stunned. He realizes now he's in an Alcoholics Anonymous group. So they get to him and he says, "Well, my name is John. I'm not an alcoholic, but I got a few issues I'd like to share." And suddenly the facilitator says, "Does anybody mind if John shares his issues?" And he says, "No, no, not at all," they all say. So he goes ahead and he shares his issues. Now, this is just simply a little episode that he experiences, but it's a riot. And it's just something that demonstrates the power of a story. He shares this little narrative, and we're all on the ground. So every one of you, give me a call at 713-526-5738. Scooter, did you have a good Christmas?
I had a great Christmas.
Excellent. What did you do? Anything interesting? Anything in particular?
Yeah, we had a couple of friends over from the station here.
Yeah?
Over to, because as you know, at radio stations there are, you know,
strange people.
White single guys with nothing to do at Christmas. So we invite them over.
White and single guys with nothing to do.
So Christmas.
So what'd you guys do? Did you just kind of
drank too much?
Just drank too much. Yeah. Party. Yeah. Very, yeah. Very good. Excellent.
And well, daughter's back in town. So it's always good to see her.
Yeah. Oh, you do have a daughter. How old is she?
She's 20. She's going to A&M now.
Excellent. Good for her. What's she studying?
To be a vet.
To be a vet. Good
a vet.
For her.
A big animal
that is
vet.
Marvelous.
A big
marvelous.
Animal vet.
Yeah, appreciate it.
A meat-raising vet.
Meat-raising vet.
Yes.
Good for her. She's got to be a terrific gal.
She's a cowgirl.
Ah, Give us a call, 713-526-5738. You are listening to your holiday stories on KPFT's So What's Your Story on 90.1 FM Houston with Hank Rubicek and Scooter filling in for Roxy. The other day, I was there was a terrific story on Channel 2. It was a story about the Berlin candy bomber. I don't know if Scooter and the rest of you watched this. It was an incredible story, and it's just perfect. In June 1948, Russia had siege to Berlin, cutting off the flow of food and supplies over highways into the city. Now, more than 2 million people faced economic collapse and starvation. The Americans, English, and French began a massive airlift to bring sustenance to the city and to thwart the Russian siege. Now, Gail Halvorsen was one of hundreds of U.S. pilots involved in the airlift. While in Berlin, he met a group of children standing by the airport watching the incoming planes. Now, though they hadn't asked for candy, he gave them some along with some gum he had in his possession. Seeing how thrilled they were by his gesture, he promised to drop more candy to them the next time he flew to the area. Now, because there were a lot of planes flying in every few minutes, the children wanted to know how they would distinguish his plane from the others. And he said he'd wiggle the wings, leading to his nickname, Uncle Wiggly Wings. A wave of public support led to donations, which enabled Halvorsen and his crew to drop 850 pounds of candy. By the end of the airlift, around 25 plane crews had dropped 23 tons of chocolate, chewing gum, and other candies in other places, in various places of Berlin. And the way he did it is that he wiggled the wings of his plane to identify himself, and then he dropped several small bundles of candy using parachutes crafted from handkerchiefs to slow their fall. Now, this is an incredible person, and he was on the news the other day, and there was an interview with him. He's 93 years old, and what he also did was to provide our one-time enemy with a new face of America, one of compassion and soul. Now he's 93, and he said, "I still see the faces of those children." And Colonel, I have to tell you, yours is the face, in my opinion, that defines the season of giving. God bless you. But again, this is just a wonderful story, in my opinion, that just has to be shared during this time of year. And we want all of you to call in, if you would please, to share your stories with us at 713-526-5738 KPFT. We've still got a little bit of time, so why don't you be thinking about it, huh? Now, other than exploring the tips and tidbits on So What's Your Story Facebook, run to monthly story swap held by the Houston Storytellers Guild on the third Tuesday of every month from 7 to 8:30 p.m. And this place is a gorgeous venue. It is St. Andrew's House at 1811 Heights Boulevard. And make sure you check out our site at www.houstonstorytellers.org for all the fun happenings. You know, there's a story that I wanted to share last week that means a great deal to me. It was a story that occurred to me exactly 10 years ago, really. It was a time when I was trying to reconnect with some friends from graduate school and some colleagues from other universities. And I called a friend of mine, her name is Sarah, because I knew that her husband, Bob, had died. And I just wanted to call to share my condolences. And when I did, I heard an incredible story. She said to me, and this was totally unsolicited, she said, "Hank, I tell you how much I love Bob and how many regrets I have. Every day he used to ask me to dance with him while I was cooking." Sarah is also a gourmet cook, and she loved to cook meals every day. And Bob apparently used to walk in while she was cooking dinner, and he'd always say, "Why don't you dance with me? Dance with me." And she'd say, "Bob, right now I'm cooking. I can't dance with you. Leave me alone." And he would do this every day. Well, one day, just as always, he walked in and asked Sarah to dance with him. She said, "Leave me alone." And as always, he just sort of left and went to take a nap for a few minutes until dinner was ready. He went into the bedroom, took a nap, and then a few minutes later, when Sarah called him, he didn't respond. So she walked in and found Bob dead. He had died of a massive coronary. And there was a pause on the phone, I remember, when we spoke. It seemed like hours, but it was just a few moments. And you could see, hear her cry, and she said, "Hank, if I had him back for a moment, all I'd want to do is to hold him and dance with him and let everything burn." That really made an indelible impression on me. It sort of ignited some thoughts that I've written about the season that I want to share with you, and I hope you enjoy them. If you ever watch kids on a merry-go-round or listen to the rain slap on the ground, watch a butterfly's erratic flight or gaze at the sun fade into the night, you'll know to dance slower because the music won't last. Feel each rhythmic pulse and tingle when you touch, tenderly. Dance slow, not fast, and learn to make the music last. Another one that I wanted to share with you that I just got from a wonderful inspirational book called Just One Can. One song can spark a moment, one flower can wake the dream, one free tree can start a forest, one bird can herald a spring, a smile can bring you friendship. One life can make a difference. It's all up to you. And it is all up to you. I want all of you to keep loving a great story, and I'm going to keep bringing them to you. And by the way, we've got a very quiet fun drive going on right now. So if you want to keep your favorite show alive, I'm inviting you to get online, kpft.org, and make a wonderful, generous donation, please. If you want to keep storytelling alive in Houston, obviously this is the place to go. I wanted to thank you, Scooter, for helping me out tonight. You were great, seriously. And you're a terrific guy, and I got to know you a little bit just by finding out about your daughter, and I really enjoyed that.
Thanks.
And don't go away, because he's up next with The Inner Side, and this is Hank Rybacek on So What's Your Story? It's one of the Power Hour programs on Thursday night on KPFT 90.1 FM, Houston. Make us a part of every day. Make it a habit to tune in every Thursday at 10 p.m. and ease into the weekend ride. Scooter, a happy new year to you, my friend, and I wish all of you the happiest, healthiest new year, and looking forward to kicking it off with you next Thursday with comedic teller Abby Koenig. You're going to love her.
All right.
Be good to each other. I'm Dr. Hank, reminding you that it is never too late to live happily ever after. Take care.